I'm Abby Kinney, and you are listening to Upzoned. Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to another episode of Upzoned, where we take an article from the news each week and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth. My name is Abby Kinney, planning consultant with Gould Evans, recording out of my kitchen during the coronavirus citywide stay-at-home order. I am joined today by Daniel Harrigus, who is the senior editor for Strong Towns and no stranger to working from home. Daniel, thank you for joining me this week. How have you and your family been holding up lately?
We are doing all right. We're just sheltering in place. I'm enjoying the company of my two dogs and two cats and missing the coffee shops I would normally go work at for a change of pace. But like you said, you know, Strong Towns is used to the remote things, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the coffee shops and the small restaurants are the things that I'm missing the most right now. Hoping that this doesn't last too long because I desperately need to get out. Well, so today we will be talking about a story that was published this week by CityLab journalist Laura Laker that is called In a Global Health Emergency, the Bicycle Shines. In this article, the author describes how communities affected by movement restrictions related to COVID-19 are opting for bicycling and walking, especially as working from home has curbed automobile traffic. In New York City, bicycling across bridges is up 52%, and bike share use in Chicago has nearly doubled as citizens have been advised to avoid using public transportation during rush hour. The author also offers some positive outcomes to this tragedy in transforming the way that we travel, providing to many positive benefits of biking for both public and environmental health, as well as social equity. So obviously, the overall movement of people is down right now. Schools are closed, people are being asked to work from home, and only to go out for essential needs. Most destinations like restaurants and stores and even some parks are shut down or are operating in some more limited way. I don't know about you, but I am an extrovert, so all I really want today is to go out for a meal and be surrounded by a bunch of strangers, but I can't. So shout out to the extroverts. You are not alone. In my city, the stay-at-home effect has seemed to be working as intended just because there's so very little traffic in the downtown area where I reside. And I'll also confirm that I've certainly noticed what the article is describing as people are taking advantage of the opportunity to go outside when the weather's nice, both by going on walks and biking. I can't really tell if there's actually more people out than usual or if it's just the lack of cars that makes it seem that way. The proportion of cars to people has certainly seemed to flip in a very noticeable way. And as someone who bikes regularly, I'll admit that the recent absence of the usual traffic has been a small bonus for me, and I'm sure others who typically don't feel safe biking on the streets. So, Daniel, I'm curious, in Florida, if you've noticed the same phenomenon, do you see a lot of people out walking and biking, or perhaps more than usual?
I would say so. And I've wondered, like you do too, if it's an illusion, you know, if it's the absence of cars makes people more visible than they would be otherwise. But for me, I will say I've been going for bike rides as sort of a sanity break and a fresh air break from being cooped up in the house all the time. And I would do that anyway. And as someone who's been a bicycle commuter as much as possible for, you know, at least the last 10 years, I guess more than that, you know, I'm hoping that people have the chance to discover what it is I've been talking about all along. And that's not at all to make light of the awful things that are going on right now, but biking is just a really great way to get around for a lot of reasons, even when there isn't a global pandemic. And I think a lot of people are afraid to do it under normal circumstances, especially here in Florida. You know, we are the epicenter of car culture. We're, you know, 4 of the 10 deadliest metro areas for pedestrians in the U.S. are in Florida. And so I talk to so many people here who are afraid to get out on the streets on a bike. Even if they like the idea in theory, they're just worried they're going to be run over. There is kind of a profound opportunity right now to just see public space in a different way and realize what our streets could be if we shed the assumption that they're for cars, full stop.
Yeah, I totally agree. Something that's been getting a lot of positive attention locally in Kansas City is how people in my community have been sort of adapting their use of public space. Our local Better Block chapter actually recently asked leaders to implement an emergency mobility network that would quickly sort of and modestly convert one lane of travel along several streets to facilitate space for social distancing, for people biking, scooting, jogging, and sort of other forms of active transportation that is currently taking place that there's just not a lot of space for. To me, this makes a lot of sense, considering most sidewalks and streets in my community are not really designed for what we are sort of needing to use them for right now, which is to social distance ourselves, but also get out for walking and biking. When you opt to walk and bike, you typically notice that the conditions of these spaces are not always in the best condition to support active transportation. And I can tell you that most of the downtown and adjacent neighborhoods in Kansas City didn't facilitate active transportation very well before this crisis. So they certainly don't support the sort of social distancing measures that are needed at this point. So I think finding modest ways to improve active transportation networks and providing us even socialization networks is important in a time like this, especially considering that there's so many residents that have already started changing the way public space is used through their own individual actions. I've seen plenty of people taking to the streets in order to maintain a safe distance from other people. And in many neighborhoods, actually, this crisis has prompted people to repurpose their public space for impromptu neighborhood get-togethers. It's, of course, incredibly important in stressful times like this that we continue to have social interactions and stay healthy. So it turns out that the local streets provide just the right amount of space to make that all happen.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I see people doing it kind of ad hoc, both just as individuals, like, hey, I'm going to walk down the middle of the street because someone's coming toward me on the sidewalk and I want to keep my distance from them and there's no cars around. But I also see, I love the flood of efforts by, you know, you mentioned your local Better Block chapter to take the opportunity to actually create ad hoc infrastructure. It's happening kind of on a grassroots organizing level more in the U.S., but there are examples abroad. Bogota, Colombia is one I've been reading about this week, where the mayor actually ordered sort of an emergency impromptu bikeway network all over the city. Bogota has really extensive public transportation, but very crowded public transportation, and they're anticipating this outbreak ramping up, and they're saying, let's act now, and let's create this alternative for people. Let's create the space for people to walk and bike around town. The thing that I would emphasize kind of from a strong towns perspective is that the current crisis is a window of opportunity, maybe politically, to do some of these things. But these things have made sense for a long time in terms of public health and in terms of local financial resilience. We like to say at strong towns that bike infrastructure is one of those low-hanging fruit, small investments that is absolutely a no-brainer for almost every city. There are places where you could put in bike infrastructure because you've got streets that are too wide. They're wider than they need to be. The width induces dangerous speeds, which ultimately result in injuries and fatalities. And it's the space that isn't going to any kind of productive use. So I'll cite as an example, Chuck Marone, our founder, his first real like on the ground demonstration of how you could put Strongtown's principles into action was a report he did for his hometown of Brainerd, Minnesota, back in 2013 called Neighborhoods First. And it was a response to a bunch of people locally kind of asking him, well, I'm reading your writing and it's all this doom and gloom stuff about how we're financially insolvent and unproductive. And what do you want us to do? And Chuck said, okay, I'll tell you some of the things you should do. And one of the recommendations in the Neighborhoods First report for this town of 13,000 people in central Minnesota was you know, he said, if I were the mayor, I would tell the public works department to go out and start striping bike lanes on streets all over the city and just do it now. Don't hold a big consultation process. Don't spend 6 months designing the network. Just start doing it because the streets are so wide. They're dangerously wide and people aren't out walking. They aren't out biking because they're afraid to be. And when you talk to people, they'll tell you that. But the political culture, there's kind of this chicken egg problem where people will say, no one does this, so there's clearly no demand for it.
Right.
And the reality is just get out there and make it safe and make it appealing. And, you know, the experience of other countries, the Netherlands have demonstrated in a really concerted effort since the 1970s that if you commit to making walking and biking attractive and safe and universally available options, people will surprise you. They'll come out and they'll do it and they'll enjoy it. And you create more vitality on streets. There are studies that show that adding bike infrastructure, widening sidewalks, creating, you know, better pedestrian conditions, like that boosts local businesses in commercial areas. Foot traffic goes up, revenues go up. There is just a slew of economic benefit, public health benefit. Like, it is a no-brainer thing to just get out and start doing. And there's an interesting thing I think that happens in a crisis where the crisis didn't really create the benefits of biking. They've always been there. I know a lot of people who've been evangelists for it for a long time. The crisis creates the opportunity to see things in a new light, that we're shaken out of our routines and we can start a little bit more from square one and we can actually ask questions like, what do we need our streets for? We have all this public space between privately owned buildings and what is it best used for? And that's a really, really powerful thing.
Yeah. And it seems that making these improvements to public space often becomes so politicized in ways that doesn't really make a lot of sense when you think about it, because this really is our public space. And so people should be able to give feedback on how those spaces are used. I think that these sort of social distancing measures have started to kind of reveal how inadequate these spaces have become for people who are walking and biking. Even though people biking right now, since there's no cars on the road, they actually have a little bit more space, but there's so many areas of the city, I would say most areas of the city, where the sidewalks are not big enough for people to maintain the recommended social distancing space between them. It really reveals that. So people sort of just take to the streets, especially in my neighborhood and other neighborhoods around the city where we have these local streets where cars really should be moving slowly enough that people could be walking in the street. People have kind of co-opted that as the extension of the sidewalk, much like many porches and balconies and things like that act as an extension of the sidewalk. I've noticed that because so many people aren't commuting, going outside for a walk or bike is really the opportunity to interact socially with people in the community. I'm actually new to my neighborhood, and so I've already met so many people just by going out and walking. My neighborhood is what people who are familiar with strong towns would describe as a traditional development pattern. The houses are arranged in a more compact pattern. They're close to the streetscape with balconies and porches that overlook the streetscape. These spaces act as sort of an extension of the sidewalk. So it's really easy for people to just interact with each other who are hanging out outside. And it also creates that proverbial eyes on the street effect, especially since most people are at home now. So even though it's challenging in this current situation, I'm glad that people are still able to benefit in small ways from how our public spaces are arranged.
There's something profound about how you get around, really, for how you understand your community and what your community extends to. The experience of getting into a car, it kind of, you're seeing your environment through the windshield as you drive somewhere, but there's a certain detachment, I think, where it's much more an experience of leaving one place and then you're at another place and you're not really taking in everything that's in between. And one of the things that I've tried to convey to people about walking or biking for transportation over all the time that I've been doing it, is you just notice your community in a different way. You see people out on their front porches or in their yards, you know, throwing a ball, and you wave to them and you say a few words. And it's very natural to do that because there's no mediating, you know, sheet of glass in between you. I routinely, even today, you know, I've lived in the same city for 9 years. I still, like, I notice local businesses when I bike past them that I've driven past them 24 times and never seen them. I notice public art, murals. If I'm out walking or biking, I will see a cool mural on the side of a building and I'll say, how many times have I driven here? And I didn't know that was there. And I think those kind of things bring us closer to each other. And I think people are really craving that right now. You know, just the chance to exchange a few words and a friendly wave with a neighbor is something that, like, you would take for granted any other time. And it feels really good right now. And
it does feel really good right now. And it's totally needed. It's a good opportunity to get out and experience your neighborhood locally on foot right now as a means of getting some sort of exercise and maintaining the social distancing. It's just a good opportunity to get to know your neighborhood a little bit more.
Yeah. And in some ways, I mean, I still think it's harder to get to know your neighborhood right now than it would be under normal circumstances. But in some ways, people are going to be pushed to who otherwise wouldn't really identify with the immediate vicinity of the place they live. And I'm just hoping, I don't think there's going to be some massive, you know, biking and walking revolution in American cities because of this. But I hope that some people take away from this dramatic sudden change in routine something that they can kind of carry with them and look at their place in a different way. And that we maybe start talking about a different set of options for how we could think about public space and who it belongs to and how we should use it. You know, I read an article today about Toronto. Well, it was Toronto and Vancouver are both taking steps to pedestrianize some major streets right now for the sake of social distancing. But I had a weird feeling of deja vu as someone who's never been to Toronto, because they're talking about Yonge Street, which runs through the heart of downtown Toronto, as a candidate for going car-free during this epidemic. And I thought, this feels really familiar. And I did a Google search. And last October, there was an article also from the Globe and Mail about a proposal in Toronto to pedestrianize Yonge Street, because it's just a common sense thing to do. This is a major artery in the heart of downtown, in, you know, a really urban place where people are out walking, people are experiencing that compact, fine-grained development pattern. But it was politically controversial under normal circumstances. And I had to wonder, you know, wouldn't it be great if they do this because of the pandemic and then everybody loves it and then they just don't go back?
Exactly. It's difficult to do it when there's the perception that, you know, there's too much traffic and you could never do it because people need to drive through here at 40 miles an hour. But in these circumstances, I do think that this is the perfect opportunity to experiment on small things that could make an impact and really help people get around at this point. It's just the perfect opportunity to try small things, and maybe you don't change it back. Maybe everybody ends up loving it.
Yeah, I think we're, you know, for better or worse, and I tend to think, I don't know, I think that we're entering a period of bottom-up innovation and small experiments. I already have friends talking about reviving the whole Victory Gardens movement from like World War I and World War II, just because it's something to do while they're home. But, you know, why don't I don't want to deal with the grocery store. Things are sold out when I go there anyway. Why don't I grow more food, you know, in my backyard? There are all sorts of little things. And there's such a hunger out there right now for just like, what are things I can do to be deliberate about how I'm living? And there's a whole psychological literature about how it's about habit formation, and people fall into habitual behaviors because we only have the mental bandwidth to make so many decisions in a day. So you know, you commute the way you commute and you do the things you do when you get home from work every day. And when you are thrown out of a regular routine, whether it's by some sort of a crisis or just a major life change, then suddenly everything is up for grabs and people do start to live more deliberately. If you're trying to forge better or healthier habits for yourself, the psychological literature says you need to upend your routines deliberately so that the habits aren't ingrained in you anymore, and you can actually make decisions about, this is what I want to do with my time, this is what I want to do with my space, this is how I want to engage with my community. So amid like the just endless flood of depressing headlines, like there's something really weirdly exciting about a bit of a reset to me in terms of like, I want to see what people do with this moment.
Yeah, I completely agree. And we'll end on a positive note today. We're running out of time, so I want to move us into the Down Zone today, which is part of the program where we get to share anything that we've been listening to, reading, watching, or just any interesting happenings happening in your life. Daniel, what do you have for us today?
I have not been reading any new books or anything. You know what I have been doing this week is I set up a standing social distancing coffee break every day. And it was actually motivated by the realization last week. I had a day where I got up and I went to work and I was still in my pajamas at 1 p.m. And I'd been working, but it didn't feel good to still be in my pajamas at 1 p.m.
That's me today, by the way.
And normally, even though Strong Towns is a remote organization, like I said at the beginning, I normally go to a coffee shop or go to the library or something to establish that separation between home and work life. And I was letting that slip. So I said, you know what? And I talked to my wife about it, and she was feeling the same way. And we said, we are going to have coffee together every morning before we start work. And we are going to go on Zoom and have just a standing link that doesn't change from day to day. And we're going to invite all our friends to just drop in. Like, this is the half hour. We added a second half hour later in the day because both of us have a lot of friends on the West Coast. And, you know, 9 a.m. Eastern was too early for those people. So twice a day, we've just been going on Zoom. And there's a link that I posted to Facebook, friends only, but you know, all of my Facebook friends can see it. And I said, drop in. If I talked to you last week, great. If I haven't talked to you in 3 years, great. Say hi. And it's been really fun.
Yeah, that sounds really fun.
The deliberate randomness of it has been fun. Like I had a chat today with, simultaneously with my parents, a friend from college who has a newborn and is at home with the baby. And a friend from high school who I was on math team with, and who is just like the weirdest, like, okay, none of you know each other. None of you have anything in common. Let's have a conversation. It was really fun.
Yeah, that is fun. Well, my contribution to the Down Zone is probably not quite as fun. Although my work has been having virtual happy hours, which has been a lot of fun. We've all kind of like seen portions of each other's houses now, which is weird now that we're all working from home and having these little happy hours. So that's a lot of fun. The other thing, I guess I should say, I've been watching one show that I just hate to admit I've been watching, but you can add me to the list of people who have recently been watching the Tiger King documentary series that was released on Netflix this week. It is so, so bizarre. If you haven't already seen it or come across the many memes that are online right now about the show, it's a documentary series that is following a guy named Joe Exotic, who hosted a big cat zoo on his farm in Oklahoma. And then it also incorporates the stories of several other people who are connected to this weird obsession of big cats. So again, a bizarre documentary series, but also a good distraction for everything that's going on right now. So I won't be too mad at myself for binging on this weird show.
I've been doing the same. I've been watching Tiger King this week. And
could the timing have been any more perfect?
Like every time you think it isn't going to get any more insane, it does.
Exactly.
It's just, yeah. Yeah. It's lives up to the hype.
It lives up to the hype. So I would recommend it if you're trying to find something that is entertaining enough to watch, even though it's super bizarre.
Yeah.
Thank you everyone for listening to another episode of Upzoned. Keep doing what you can to build a strong town. Thanks everyone. Let me show you what-